Hey there, Groovy Pod people. I just wanted to say before we start the show proper, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this podcast again. I have an enormous cold, which is why this podcast is a day late, because I would have recorded it yesterday, but I wouldn't have got through without sneezing. So I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. But when I recorded this interview with Catherine O'Maisie a couple of weeks ago now, I was in rude health. So you won't hear that on the interview itself. But anyway, thanks for downloading. Here we go. Let's pod.
She's talking about the funny things that have her all in fits. She's ranting about the subjects that get right on her tits. She's chatting with the lovely folk and some who are real shits. It's smooth style, no bits. Smooth style, no bits. It's a podcast.
Hey there, pretty festive podcast people. This is Catherine Mary welcoming you to the latest episode of Smooth Style No Bits, when it's of course been festive week. I would have got this podcast out yesterday, but I'm afraid illness has reached my house. I've had one of those colds that is like when people have colds in a sitcom and they're just going, oh, ask you, all the time, and you think, no, nobody's really like that. But I have been like that, so... Hey ho, I hope it hasn't visited your house and that you have stayed warm and well and happy over this festive season. Since we last spoke, I have had some amazing Christmas experiences. I went to see Rob Orton's Sky Show at the Art House in Southampton. What a beautiful piece of work. Rob Orton, is he a stand-up comedian? Is he a poet? Is he a performance artist? What is he? But he did a show where he talked to us about the sky and his love of the sky, and it was funny and beautiful and moving and bizarre and all the things I want art to be about. I get bored of seeing things when I feel like I've seen a version of them before. And of course, because I'm quite old now, I've seen quite a lot of things before, but I really felt Rob was saying something that I'd never seen before. So that was a beautiful thing. Then we move on to the astonishing Southampton Ukulele Jam Christmas Cabaret, which happened at the Talking Heads, which is a performance venue pub place here in Southampton. I don't know how many people performed. I mean, maybe, I don't know, a couple of hundred altogether, either as a mass ensemble or in individual acts. And... oh my God, if you want to say something about the transformative power of music, there it all is. These people, including myself, who have, you know, found time in life to rehearse up songs and acts in their sitting rooms and kitchens in between times, and you know that people have put that work in, and then they get up and perform it for the rest of us over a couple of minutes, and the love and cheers that everybody gets when they stand up and do their thing. It's just glorious. It was packed in there. God knows how much money we raised. We were doing it for a couple of charities. If you listen to the podcast with Colin McAllister, you'll have heard him talking about it, but I'm sure we got together a shed load of money. I had a particularly blessed time. I have long wanted to recreate a performance by the Roaches, who are a band of sisters. A Canadian band who are in that sort of Loudon Wainwright, Nancy Griffith kind of world of folky people. And the Roaches, on an album of theirs I had in the 80s, had done a version of the Hallelujah Chorus, which is three voices, and I'd always wanted to do it. And so I reached out and found out about a couple of friends who I guessed would read music. Vix, who has played on the folk scene for years, and I knew she had a background in church music, so I kind of guessed she would maybe be able to read a score. Lou, who is a music teacher, so I felt pretty confident she'd be able to read music. And then it was Vix who introduced Anna to the group, and Anna can also do the magic. That's the only way it was going to work, because we needed to pick up the score, the choral part, and be able to rehearse it over, you know, as short amount of time as possible and pull it together. And we did it. And it had absolutely the reaction that I wanted. which was why I did the whole thing, why I pushed the idea, why I pushed the rehearsals, was because you could hear when we started singing, people were looking and they were watching and they were thinking, okay, what's the gimmick? What are they gonna, as if we were gonna go into another song or there was gonna be some trick. And then after a minute, you could sense this wave in the room of people going, oh my God, they're doing the whole thing. And sure enough, we were. And we did the whole thing from beginning to end. And at the end, there was silence in the room as people were listening. And then a massive wave of congratulations at the end, which was just so rewarding. It was fantastic. There is a little iPhone video of it, which I'll put up on the Smooth Style Bits website if you want to have a look. Oh, excuse me, I've got to cough. You're lucky, that's the only one I've done. It's been a sniffing, coughing time. So, a bit of performing. Then it's been Christmas, of course. Lots of family and friends around, which is nice. I hope you had a pleasant and warm and cosy time, whatever you've been doing, including at work. I hope that it was warm and there were lots of smiles at work, if that's where you had to be. I hope to get some smiles going to see Anchorman 2. But if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, you'll know that I was not looking forward to it. And I decided that I would go, taking my germs to the cinema as part of my quest to smash the patriarchy. I'm smashing the patriarchy with germ warfare this week. Anchorman 2 was a pile of shite. It was a jumbled, untogether piece of nonsense. There were a few set pieces where I was laughing like a drain, fantastic kind of comedy car crash where everybody's tumbling around in the van, and I laughed. I'll admit it, I laughed, and that was great. But the rest of it, as we cut from one scene to the next, I couldn't work out how and why these scenes all went together. Anybody who's seen it, can you tell me why we had the scene when he went round to dinner? This white man at his black girlfriend's parents' house? What was that for? Apart from a sort of comedy, supposed comedy bit about a white man being uncomfortable in the company of black people. Is that funny? Not in my world, it isn't. And then, of course, we had to stay in to watch Pemberley. I thought it was going to be Boxing Day, as I'd advertised to you, so I hope you didn't watch it all the way through, because my brother's triumphant performance was not on Boxing Day, it was last night. If I tell you, he was wearing a wig, breeches and hose, and at one point had to say, "It's a powerful, strange business," then you might know which character he was. Again, I'll put a little photo up on the show's website if you're interested in having a look. But it's always a joy. I always slightly have the feeling like when he was in Brookside occasionally, and you're watching the telly and you think, what are you doing, man? They're trying to make a television programme. Get out of the way. It's impossible to take him seriously. But it's lovely that he's working, of course, because most actors don't. So that's a great thing. This week's interview is, I actually recorded it a couple of weeks ago when I was completely well, so you won't hear any sniffing or coughing, thank God, is with a mother and daughter duo, Catherine Anthony and her daughter Maisie Anthony Tipper. And it was a real pleasure to talk to these two women. I've known Maisie since she was a girl, and she's now a kind of university-aged person. And we talked a lot about, some about feminism particularly, but also our sort of political leanings overall and where they come from, what the roots of those are. You'll hear, as my technical skills in podcasting still grow, that when you get two people who laugh as loudly as Catherine Anthony and I do, that sometimes the sound balance is not as great as it could be. So I'm sorry about that, but it's only because we were having a good time. We talk about the benefits of younger parenthood, and how that's enabled us to find our lives again, back again, is in kind of, you know, middle age. I know lots of people have trouble with that phrase, but hey guys, you know, 40, decently middle-aged. I'm 50, so I'm well in there. We talk about slicing ham. We talk about dick culture. We talk about the poll tax as a crucible of our political awareness. It was also very interesting to hear again a friend of mine who I consider to be a very thoughtful political mind to say, I'm not a feminist. Not that she's not a feminist, but she's happy to identify herself as a feminist, but I don't see myself as a real activist. And yet Catherine Anthony is a woman who was fundamental in the opening and the running of the Women's Centre in Southampton in the 80s and into the 90s. She talks about the Reclaim the Night marches, and she talks about, as I say, the poll tax riots, where she was there with a dog and a baby. So it's interesting, isn't it? Even if we don't identify ourselves as political people, maybe we are more than we think they are. So here's the interview, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
No farting.
You can fart if you want. I was talking to somebody the other day about that. When I was a kid, you couldn't even say the word. You couldn't even acknowledge that it happened.
I remember a boy in my primary school, and he was laughing about something, and the teacher said, "What are you laughing at?" And he went, "Jason Trumped." And I was so outraged that he'd said it.
It was embarrassing that he said it.
I wasn't Jason. I hadn't trumped, but you know, it was like that he'd trumped.
I've always had trouble telling my children off when they, like, one of my children, no names, is a massive farter and finds it hysterically funny, and it's maybe not the one you'd think it is.
No,
and so we'll do it at meal times with these. You go, "For God's sake!" But I'm just falling about laughing because it is the funniest thing.
He or she, they are at work and blames it on small children.
Oh,
how dare they?
Or the dinner lady at Taunton's College.
I don't know which fart you're talking about.
Yes. We can blame the dog these days, obviously. Yeah. Although a dog fart is absolutely distinctive.
Oh, I can imagine.
Anyway, should we move on from this
horrible
topic?
Thanks.
Greetings, my sisters.
Greetings.
Welcome. I am here with my good friends, Catherine Anthony and Maisie. What's your proper surname?
Anthony Tipper.
You are Maisie Anthony
Tipper.
I'm
Maisie Anthony Tipper.
And I believe you know each other already, you two.
We have met.
You have met. Mother and daughter.
This is a little bonding session.
A bonding session. And Maisie, you're just back from uni,
five seconds
ago.
Yeah, so way back.
Did you even know before you got to Southampton that Mum had got you into this?
She told me pretty much as I got off the train. I kind of shouted it over the barriers.
Yeah, but like, we're over to Cats.
So yeah, but it's exciting.
But we've been friends since you were a baby.
Definitely, but ages.
It's been a lovely thing
been a lovely thing.
Grace is now, my daughter is now, we know each other. I've met Maisie probably had most contact with you as a younger woman through Woodcraft.
Yeah, through Woodcrafty things.
And which is this sort of youth organisation connected to the co-op movement.
We call it Socialist Brownies.
Socialist Brownies. And when I first joined, you and your gang were the glamorous older girls. And you were
now
so
old and not glamorous.
Oh, you were so lovely with the younger kids. And now my daughter has grown up
she's
one of the older ones.
Isn't that amazing?
And has this gorgeous friendship. Yeah,
when we joined, it was the Roscoe
girls. They were the glamorous older ones.
And even I thought they were glamorous and old. And I was a grown up, and they were just... And they, you know, they played with the kids, and you just think, oh, these beautiful young women, they're so lovely.
Yes, and as role models for my daughter, what more could I wish for?
And, our little babies, they'll never be like that. And look at them!
I know.
They're all just...
So we've seen you lot sort of come through sort of early teens, and now you're all at sort of university and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we all are now.
I think everybody's gone to uni now.
So we've all scattered across the country.
We're all going to be 20 this year, aren't we? Either 20 already or 20.
That's really weird as well, because you're not that much younger than my son.
It's weird.
But you've always seemed like another generation to him. But actually, as you get older,
it gets a bit smaller.
Really,
he's 22,
it
doesn't. Really, you're no different at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, you could get married and we could be together. No, we must not set our children up with each other. Not appropriate. So, Catherine, how do I know you?
Well, do you know, I think you came on a printmaking course.
I did.
But I don't know how we never met before because we know a lot of the same people.
I know, it's mysterious.
We've moved in a lot of, you know, the whole co-op thing, October books. You were at SACTA, I think, at the time, weren't you?
Just when you say I came on a printmaking course, just tell me a bit about that.
Oh, well, that was at Red Hot Press.
Red Hot Press, Catherine?
Well, Red Hot Press is Southampton's print workshop. It's an amazing place, www.redhotpress.org.uk.
Oh, it is an amazing place. It's a beautiful place.
It's an amazing place.
And I came to your Christmas print sale the other day, and oh my God, it's transformed from one
little
square
room.
Space yeah. in the old cattle market in Southampton, one room, cold. And then you knock through into that space at the back.
Yep.
And then this year, you've taken over the building next door. So suddenly,
and weirdly, has
it has blossomed. Yes, it's got warmer.
We don't know how that happened, but
we're
hoping it's global warming. Hooray! But yeah, no, it's got warmer.
But with the twinkly lights, and you had the cut paper projection on the ceiling, and and it smelled of mulled wine, and you had very grown-up jazz playing.
Oh, well, that was, I think that was it was classic FM, because we forgot to bring any moment, I was like, it was like an echo, because that new space, there's very, very big and echoey at the moment, and so the reason we didn't have the lights on, we had the paper cut, is because it's sort of like, it's like that thing in Willy Wonka, you know, where they make the TV, and he's got the
dog in the Yes, it's all
like that.
You have to issue special suits.
Yes,
for us
that's
to
right. So we had the lights off and the paper cut, and it all made it a little bit more intimate.
But it looked like it's going to be a working space.
It is going to be a working space.
Because it looks like a beautiful white box gallery at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit white cube, isn't it?
Messed it up.
Yeah. Expecting what's his name? Joplin, whatever his name is, to turn.
Scott Joplin.
Scott Joplin. Joplin. I can't remember his name. I'm so in with the arts crowd, but yeah.
Printmakers are a different breed.
Yeah, we don't know about art.
Different breed. So that's how I came on one of your courses, and various people had said, oh, it's been run by this very nice woman, these very nice women, Catherine and Sarah. And yes, but then it
quite for yourself.
Quickly, it became clear that we did know all sorts of people. Yeah. And it is a bit of a mystery how our paths never crossed before, really. But we both had small children younger than a lot of our friends, I think.
Yeah,
and that does take you out of the mainstream of grown-up life for quite a few years,
but
I think.
Then you hit your 40s and they're all
adults. And I know, all my friends who didn't produce children until they were sort of over 40, you think, suckers!
They're all so tired, aren't they?
Hello!
Yeah.
I went to this thing recently, which was a nightclub, in inverted commas, which has been set up by people who say, yeah, we used to go out raving, but now we've got small children.
Oh.
And so we've set up this night, which is basically they've rented a room in a community club thing, and somebody puts on some things and everybody drinks and dances. And I went there and I sat there and I thought, oh, right, this
like
doesn't
a school disco.
I go out all the time.
What's wrong with
I'm
you?
I'm constantly having amazing experiences in cities and with people I've never met before. I think, what the hell? I thought, oh yeah, my children are really old now.
I think you do that bit for a while. I seem to remember, because I've got two cousins that are the same age as me. We're sort of like a year or two apart. And they've got, well, my cousin Becky has got three children, five and under.
Oh,
I know, can you believe it?
Gordon Bennett.
And the other one's got...
All singles? No twins or anything?
No. Three, a five, three and 19 months. She just whacked them out.
Yeah.
She just thought, right, wait.
But that will have benefits later.
Yeah, but I think she's really... I'm not sure, but anyway. But, you know, there's her when she had her first, Alfie. And then my other cousin who had... he's got two about the same age as well. And it was all, you know, on Facebook, how tired they were, how tired they were. And I was like, hey. But then that was about the time that Maisie started, you know, going out and going to the pub.
Yes.
And then you have to stay awake, you know, worrying until they're coming.
Don't feel you have to. No, you are allowed to go to sleep.
But actually, now it's like, there's no way I can physically stay up. So it's just like, she gets in.
Well, and they don't go out till midnight.
That's right, I know.
That's the modern way.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, you stop. So there's probably like about a year, 18 months of like worrying. And it's really weird because when you're in Norwich, don't give it a second thought.
No,
she could be anywhere. As soon as she hits Southampton and I can think, right, okay, where are you, where are you, where are you? Start worrying again. She could be doing anything. Just stay in Norwich.
This grown woman. So what are you doing in Norwich, Rose?
I'm at university, at the University of East Anglia.
What course are you doing?
I'm doing history and politics there at the moment.
Groovy.
So I've just finished my first semester of my second year. Which has all ended quite well, I think. It seems to have gone
Is it what you expected?
It is. Everyone told me before I left, like, oh, history, that's so much reading. And I was like, I like reading, I'll be okay. But it's not like stories, so it's not as fun. It's not Hungry Caterpillar anymore. So it's just
the history of the Hungry Caterpillar.
You've always, as long as I've known you, you've been obsessed with the oddest thing. Well, your mother's got obsessions with, I don't know. You seem to, there's a world of things like Beowulf. And medievalness and things, which just doesn't, for me, it connects into a world of sort of wizards and myths, and that's just not my thing.
We're good at fixating.
Not my thing. But you, that, are you, do you sort of share those kind of...
You're more modern history, aren't you?
I prefer modern history, but like that's what I study more. But then if I'm going to go to a museum, I'd rather go to like really old museums.
Yeah. Super ancient things.
Yeah, so I don't want to learn about that in a university sense, but... I would rather go to a British Museum or something. It's my spiritual home.
I've never been to the British Museum.
Oh,
I know.
I have to die now.
That's just
it's the
she wants to live there.
I know.
It's the most beautiful place.
I'm sure.
I love it so much.
Oh, do you?
I would live there if I could.
Doesn't the director of the British Museum live there?
Oh.
I believe.
Oh, in a nest.
Because I believe. Yes. They have apartments and the kids sort of ride tricycles around the exhibits late at night, I think.
That's
or maybe... That's
you know,
a film
stop,
I've seen.
Stop, because if it's not true, I don't want to, you know, I want that to be true.
That is amazing. No, that is my favourite place in the whole world, I think.
Yeah.
I would go there every day and still see something new,
oh,
I think.
Oh, God. Maybe so. I'll just never go in some weird, weird
protest.
Up my nose despite my face sort of
like
way.
Like me and Woody Allen films. I haven't seen them.
Meh.
I haven't seen any of those. I'm not going to now. It's too late.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's just too late.
Too late for the British Museum. Thousands of years of culture.
Too late for me.
That.
But yeah.
Well, what's been a delight to me, particularly watching you transition through from your child to your womanhood, Maze, has been that you take a definite, overt interest in feminism.
I do, yeah.
Which is something that, as I announced on the previous podcast, I'm working very hard on smashing the patriarchy at the moment. I'm more and more angry about the patriarchy as I get older.
I spend a lot of time just being quite angry, like just grumbling.
I'm delighted because I live with a young person who tells me to shut up. Mum, it's only an advert, is what I hear a lot.
I think, yeah, for a while.
Well, there was that woman who was... His mother, she was a character in the film.
Yeah.
I think at 13 you just want to tell your mother she's wrong all the time. But I'm hoping that if I carry on pointing out the outrageousness of it all to her, she will come through in the end.
I think that was I think for a while I was like, oh no, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And then like the more, I don't know if it's like you get older and people start talking to you differently because they don't talk to you like you're a child anymore.
Mm.
Or if it's just like being like more aware of like news and things like that, but more and more I was like, these things aren't fair, and I don't like want to live anywhere where anyone isn't treated fairly.
Is
no
it something?
Is
it something you talked about at home with Mum? Was it a sort of?
I don't,
is it a word?
I did have a suffragette poster up on the wall.
We did, didn't we? I do remember that.
A Votes for Women poster.
No, I don't think
Maisie's dad helpfully pointed out that we had the vote now and I needed to take the poster down, but I thought, you know, carry on fighting.
Only 5 minutes ago, people. Only 5 minutes ago in the grand scheme of things.
I don't know if you ever sat me down and were like, you need to be a feminist, but it was definitely like, I was never ashamed to say I'm a feminist.
So the word was always there.
It was always
So. Well, you were founder child member of the Women's Centre toddler group, so...
Yeah!
We didn't call it a mother and toddler group like all the other. We called it woman and toddler.
I don't remember something.
Because women weren't
Women
and small
women
child
in
the group.
And then there was lots of discussions about male children.
Oh, I can remember that.
Oh my God. You know, male children.
And up to certain ages,
yeah,
you know, up to sort of 7 seemed to be all right. But then you're sort of beginning to get into discussing, you know, young boys emerging sexuality, and then you have to get into a whole conversation about, but what if they're gay?
Yes,
what about trans boys?
We never got that far with the it was a very small and select groups. How I Met Claudia, actually, she came along to that.
So there was the women's. I remember there being a women's centre in
One A Beavers Hill.
Were you, which is very near here? Were you part of setting it up, or were
no,
you?
No, no, no. It'd been set up years and years ago. Years ago, those old women. You know, when in the days, miraculously, when city councils would give a property to yeah. be a women's centre. And originally, I believe, it was down, I think it's all been knocked down now, but you know, on the way down to, that is it Empress Road, behind Aldi?
Yes.
And the Acorn
In
Workshops.
In the Acorn Workshops, yeah.
And you know there's that little row of houses there?
Yes, a little terrace of houses.
I think it was one of those right. originally, I think. Somebody will find, will, you know, say that's not right, but I think that's where it was. And then it moved and they got given 1A Beavers Hill, which was just a sweet little place. And sadly, I saw it through to its demise. I don't know whether that's anything to do with me. It was sort of on its last legs.
Maisie and the toddler group.
Yeah, yeah, too much colouring in.
Couldn't handle it.
Too much colouring in. But it was. It did get passed on to a charity that worked with sex workers afterwards. We just handed it over. But we were really lucky. So all through the 90s, it was a peppercorn rent, which we never paid. I think it was 5p yeah. or something. And we had a really, it was a big, well, it was an old three-bedroom house, and we got it up and running again. We used to have quite a lot of groups meeting there. For a while, the homeless healthcare team had a clinic. They had a clinic in the back room, but it just, you know, things change and there weren't new people. Because I think that would have been sort of early 90s.
Yeah.
And then through to sort of 2000, I guess. And by then, you know, you weren't getting any young students contacting you, first year students going, oh yeah, you know, because to be a feminist,
yes, I must come and volunteer,
I
must.
A dirty word, I think, you know, there's that whole, oh, I'm not a feminist.
But also, some of those issues have actually been taken on in mainstream things.
Yeah.
Like there are sexual violence units in police stations
yeah,
now,
yeah,
and things like that. So, you know, still, I mean, with a great degree of difference in quality of service all over the place, and I know that lots of those services are sort of under threat, but I think some of those ideas, which were very radical,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, sort of hippies yeah. thought about them at the time, well, it's a bit like, you know, all the people in my sort of teens and my young womanhood who were going on about, Earth's heating up, it's not a good thing, it's not a good thing. We're just going, what?
Yeah.
Shut up, you hippies, with your organic this and your wee moon cups and your natural sponges and your, you know, but we're hey now, here we go. Yeah. So I always think that, listen to the hippies.
Yeah, listen to
the hippies are usually right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hippies are usually right.
So I think that's where it probably, I think it was probably, you know, there was some sort of, but you know, I could never be described as a strident feminist, I don't think. But
no, but it's
a Reclaim the Night and stuff and the women's disco. And I suppose that you've
loved the women's disco. Women's
disco.
Loved it.
It was so
it was terrifying, but
it
I loved
was
it.
Terrifying.
In my shared house, one of the you know, the collective. I shared a house with one of the collective, and so yeah, we were quite closely connected to the women's disco. Me and my mate would go down.
Yeah.
And partly love being in this space where, oh, you
where
just
was
not
it when you
think
went
about men at the Labour Club.
Ah, right, yeah.
And then as a straight woman, I would be chatted up by gay women and just be like, ah! Don't know what to do!
The ones they used to have, we used to go to the Women's Week one, which used to be in the Solent Suite.
Oh, yes, I went to some of those.
And I always remember there was always that woman there, quite an older woman who used to wear the sailor's hat and the blazer.
Yes!
Loved her. I haven't seen her.
She was like a sort of proper 30s lesbian with a monocle and a cigar,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
she?
She was just fantastic.
She looked like she'd have been in the Cotton Club
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. She was great.
Somebody will tell us.
Where is she?
Who she was.
Yeah, who she was.
Mo Foster will know.
She'll be able to tell us. So I suppose it's all a bit of that, really. And then
so you're a little child growing up in that world.
Exactly,
so it's,
yeah.
this is
so
just
a
normal.
Absorb things, don't you?
Yeah, but I think, you know, going to university and that whole sort of campus, stuff. You know, all that crap that goes on, and what do they call it? There's those words. I don't know. Lads.
How many people you can kiss.
Yeah.
And these things,
the
things
nicest.
Written on the t-shirt.
Yeah, we have t-shirt parties, and I wrote for our student online tabloid, and we've got quite a feminist team who work there, and our editor wrote an article saying, like, I don't like the things people write on their t-shirts, I find them offensive, I think you should all consider who you're, who's going to read things, just because you're in public, you need to just
work out who's
around you. And then, like, everyone on there was like, oh, bloody feminists, who do they think they are? Like, I can write what I want. And it was like, if you're going around with things written about a certain race or a certain disability,
I think that's a really good connection to make now, because those are, I mean, what the opinions people have in their heads is one thing, but what comes out of people's mouths now has changed dramatically, like comedy on television or whatever, about what is okay.
Yeah.
But the big one, the big 50% of the population one, is still there. I was reading a really interesting thing the other day, which she was talking about, people talk about rape culture, and she said for her it's not rape culture, it's dick culture.
Mm.
This idea that dicks are out there, dicks can be talked to, dicks can be waved in your face, dicks can be celebrated and referred to and prodded about.
You wrote that article for me, didn't you?
Yeah, I wrote an article, again, for the Norwich Tab, and it was just a complete joke article, and it was, we have a club on campus and they have a very rubbish DJ. Before, I was very neutral about him. He's been very rude about me, so I will just say he's a rubbish DJ.
You're not very good at what you're doing,
and
mate.
I wrote a joke article about the 5 worst songs that they play, and it was like the Fresh Prince theme tune, and I was like, if I wanted to hear this, I'd just stay at home and watch TV. It was a complete joke. Most people who read it, a lot of my friends were like, oh, it's funny. And then the DJ commented on there telling me to fall on a bag of pointy dicks.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't think that's like biologically or physically possible.
Let's just draw that, shall we?
I don't think of the bag of pointy dicks.
It doesn't sound enjoyable for anybody.
Where have they come from? Why are they so pointy? Did you need to put them in a bag?
It's like, I don't think I would enjoy it. I don't think whoever's dicks they are would enjoy it. I don't think the DJ would enjoy it. Like, I don't know who it was. And I was like, it's a clearly joke article. If you're such a good DJ, why do you have to be so horrible to me?
Yes.
I would say 90%, if I was a man writing that article, he wouldn't have said that. He would have been like, I hope you fall off a bridge or something, which is equally horrible.
Would not involve
But it's not as like
pointy.
Absolutely. Did you see that just in the last couple of days, the Crown Prosecution Service have said they are going to prosecute 2 of the people who have sent highly abusive texts.
Caroline Prado Perez.
They did it in a very crap way, because she found out about prosecution via Twitter.
Oh.
Despite the fact that she'd had a whole conversation with the CPS about...
Yeah.
She's said this now publicly, that she had a whole conversation with them about how that process would be managed, because obviously they're still out there and she's very vulnerable. Yes, her and a couple of prosecutions aren't going forward.
What about Mary Beard? Because she's just had...
I don't know if there were prosecutions. The ones against Stella Creasy, the MP, they're not going forward. They talk, just in the piece I read, about the very high burden of proof. So I'm interested to understand more about that, about what is this high burden of proof? Is it kind of... I mean, in some sense, it's new. You know, these cases are new.
Yeah.
This hasn't existed for, well,
no.
The internet's existed for quite a long time. But it's a new
it's
thing
the public
for
sphere
the police
it,
taking
it's
it
the
forward.
The absolute public sphere of Twitter. I do not tweet because I just don't understand.
You're
it.
A fool.
I am a fool. I will one day. I will.
Oh, you'll
tweet.
Love it.
You
will absolutely love it.
You tweet
start,
like a demon, don't
you? I tweet about everything.
Once you start,
you just can't stop. It's like a wormhole.
That
you
may
just
be
fall
the
into
problem.
It.
Oh,
but there's more
the
laughs on Twitter than anywhere.
I always think. I look on Facebook and I'm like, all these people I went to school with, they're so boring.
Nah.
And then
maybe edit that bit.
The people I actually know. And they're just telling me about like what they had for lunch, and it's boring. And then someone I don't know will say it, and it's really hilarious.
All the accusations that people make against Twitter, you think, oh, that's Facebook, mate. That's Facebook.
No, exactly.
Come with the cool kids. We're all on Twitter now.
I always check my Twitter before I check anything else, really. Like, But like that has made me.
Twitter-holic.
I think Twitter has made me a lot more like. Could you get your news straight away there? And like, you don't have to worry about. I think it's more from the source then. You're not worried
about
what
you
pay for.
Well, and also, I follow,
I
get loads of, I'm connected into loads of feminist things and women's things through.
Mm.
I mean, I do work for this thing called the Women's Room, which is a database of
female
experts for the media. Because this was started by Caroline Criado Perez, we were just talking about, who was sick of the BBC saying, well, we'd love to have a woman talk about Syria, but there aren't any. But excuse me!
Not a single woman.
So it's basically a free thing, and to be an expert, you basically just either have to work in it or have experienced it. Mm. The example is always, you might be a breast cancer surgeon or you might have had breast cancer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can talk from either of those perspectives. Mm. And it's a fabulous thing.
Yeah, I think... Yeah,
they were looking for some sort of volunteering thing,
I think.
I'm always, you know, pushy mum, you always
never got around to it.
Oh, yes, they're always looking people for maybe people to tweet for them or that sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, I just do the back end of the...
Very interesting.
But obviously, it's all like it's confidential. I can't tell you anything about anybody who's on there. But God, Lord, that's some fascinating people. Yeah, no, I do find that. I don't know. I do know actually. There's something about the process of getting older. I was trying to think about where my ideas of feminism came from, and I think a very something that was very influential in my life was that I grew up around theatre people.
Mm.
And everybody was gay or straight. And this was completely normal in my world.
Yeah.
There weren't even words for it.
No.
There were no words. There was just, well, there's these Brian people. And Alex, they live together. Yeah. And then there's Mary and Sheila, they live together. It's just, there were no words for it. And it was a long time into my grown-up life, really, before I really reflected on the fact that that was quite an unusual experience in the world.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of my ideas of fairness and equality and just allowing people to be in the world, the idea of we are, you know, the most sort of persuasive definition of feminism I have ever had is the one that says feminism is just... It's just the idea that women are human beings.
Yeah.
Women are people.
Yes, that's right.
You know, no more, no less. Yeah. We are just human. Yeah. And actually, the differences between men and women are minuscule. Mm. Minuscule.
Yeah.
I was chatting to a boy I go to university with. I was talking to him, and he was saying, like, because at my university we've got quite a strong feminist society, but sometimes they do things that people don't always agree with and blah, blah, blah. But every society does, every political society. But anyway, the feminist society get a lot more hate for it. But I was talking to someone and they were saying, like, oh, feminists, like, they think they're better than men and, like, all this. And I was like, no, literally, I was like, if you agree with men and women being equal, you're a feminist.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, well, I do agree with that. And he was like, that doesn't sound so bad.
Then there you go, then.
And I was like, well, there you go, then. He was like, oh,
but then take that
right.
lens,
yeah.
young man. And look at every situation you come across through that lens.
As soon as I said that, though, he was like, oh, well, that doesn't sound so bad after all. That sounds okay.
That sound anywhere near as bad. So there's no stabby death kill. There's no,
I was like, what did you think it was?
No,
like,
we're going to poison in people's tea of the Yeah, I don't have to torture anybody.
I was like, what did you think it was? I don't understand. I was like, yeah. He was like, oh, okay, then. I guess I do agree with it. And I was like, exactly. So...
Yes. But also, I think the violence of the reaction against the idea shows that it just proves the point to me.
And that young man is finalising his sex change.
Yes.
Well done, Maisie. Another woman.
What about you? I mean, you're happy to say, I am a feminist.
Well, I don't say it every day.
Do you not?
No.
I guess I'm... Good morning, Pete.
I'm Shirley.
I am a feminist. Because it's just... what else would you be?
Yeah.
You know, what else is... I'm left-handed. Don't tell people that every day. I do, actually.
I do go on about it quite a lot.
Special patch words. In fact, can we just change the whole focus to what a bad time left-handed people have? It's really hard.
I've got a left-handed child. Believe me, I know.
You know. Because what else is there to be? You know, I don't think, you know, I just, yeah, it's, I can't.
What were ideas of men and women and roles and things about for you as a kid?
Well, both my parents always worked. We didn't live with my dad all the time. So my mum was kind of, she just sorted everything out, you know? So I suppose... In a way, yeah, brought up by, a lot of the time brought up by a single parent.
Well, was that work that kept them apart?
Or were they generally not liking each other.
Oh, right, so they were...
just generally not being...
So they lived in different houses?
Yeah, my dad lived in Norwich and we lived in the countryside outside. But then we moved to Portugal, but then they worked, you know, my dad worked all the time because he ran a bar. And I don't know, it's just... There was nobody ever said in, you know, I've never had anything said to me in my life that, oh, you know, girls can't do that and boys can't, boys do this and this is what the man does and this is what the woman does.
Because you went to an international school as well, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah.
Which always sounds very groovy to me.
It does.
Very, very groovy.
Kind of less so when you look at my
in the sunshine. And it seemed, and you had quite hands-off parents, would you say?
Are they going to hear this? I think hands off is a very good way Well, I don't think I gave them a choice to be hands on, really,
right.
Because I kind of used to skedaddle off, and you know, we used to get 3 months summer holiday, and I wasn't really at home a lot of it because there was a beach.
Oh, how
you know,
lovely!
I know, yeah. So they used to go out to work early in the morning. I'd get up,
and you just
I'd go to the beach.
Sort yourself out.
Might come home, get some tea, go out again. Or actually, me and my mum used to spend a lot of time together thinking about it in the evenings because she used to have to slice a lot of ham. And
professional reasons?
This is a hobby, you know. We used to have to make.
Yes, she can do it all different shapes.
No, my dad. My dad, bless him, he has to have everything. It's got to be. Good. Whatever he does is always
okay.
Great.
To the best
know, to
standard,
the best standard.
To the...
So he wasn't going to have crappy shop-bought burgers sold in his bar. He was going to have handmade
okay.
burgers, which involved going and buying huge amounts of minced meat, mixing it all, hand-pressing the burgers. And, you know, when you're selling God knows how many hundreds of burgers. But that's what we used to do.
Can I introduce you to Captain Birdseye?
So we used to make the burgers and freeze them, and my mum used to, they used to do chicken and chips. It was all very sort of English, you know, English tourist
yeah.
food. And my mum used to roast, the chicken used to be half roasted. It's probably terribly bad for you.
You're making
half
me hungry
roasted,
now.
And then it would get taken cold and then fried.
That sounds awful. That's
the sound of
that. That's a dream.
That's why you're a feminist. It's all the bacteria.
I might have got that wrong, but she used to cook them and then they get fried later and slice a lot of ham. So we used to spend a lot of time in the evenings together. The TV, my mum doesn't speak Portuguese, so the TV consisted of us watching programmes, which then she would say, what's happening? And I would lie. So, yeah, and we used to, it sounds terribly old fashioned, but we did used to make our own entertainment. We
yeah.
used to play really good games. We used to play a game where you had to eat a cream cracker and whistle the national anthem.
British or Portuguese?
Well, you could do either, whichever one you wanted. Yeah, eat a cream cracker and then whistle without laughing. You know, cream crackers are terribly drying. And there was another game where you had to run around the house and touch all the doors and be fine. I don't know if she did much of the running. But then, you know, that evolved into that you had to crawl.
That's
know.
Like me at camp inventing spy games for small boys.
That's right, absolutely.
There's a spy in those bushes 500 yards away in that direction. Go and find it and come and report back.
So I did spend a lot of time with my mum and... Yeah, so, but...
And what brought you back to England?
Oh, kind of deported. I came back to go to Itchen College, which I didn't spend much time
and
at.
And did you want to do that, or was
not
it...
Not really, no. But, you know, it's probably worked out all for the best.
So why... Well, there was no option for staying in...
no A-levels, I think.
There must be something. They don't just throw Portuguese kids out the street, do they? Or do they
well,
all go off to work at 16,
yeah,
17,
really
kind of thing?
School ends at 16 there, and you can go to college, but because I'd gone to an international school, then I would have had to go to a Portuguese college, and that would have been...
And
my
it wasn't
Portuguese
so...
maybe wasn't so good.
How long
know.
Were you in Portugal?
Five and a half years.
You certainly have a very in-depth knowledge of Portuguese cake.
And
sweetmeats.
I have a knowledge of
cake. Sweetmeats, generally.
My,
I picked
my
up many
the,
a tip from you.
My sister is the... best Portuguese, best cook of Portuguese food.
And she's still there, isn't she?
Yeah, she's still there, churning out the food.
Did she stay all the time or did she go back?
No, she's been there since she was 16.
Well.
Yeah, she's Portuguese.
And how is your Portuguese now?
It's rusty, really.
But you slip back into it.
I get by, yeah, when we go.
It's a bit like, no, well, your language is, well, I speak French.
Yeah.
Useless.
Useless
language.
Yeah, that's right.
Pointless. You've got Brazil, at least.
Yeah,
a massive
Brazil,
country.
Goa. I mean, Miles and Goa at the moment, and I was looking at a map, and it was like, oh, wow, it's all Portuguese names. It was amazing. So I don't think he's engaging in the culture very much, though, I suspect.
Yeah, I don't know why I suppose this... I mean, I suppose we're getting down to a sort of nature-nurture thing, aren't we? Because
yeah.
I mean, I was just a... big old lefty from...
Yeah. Well, my parents are not big old lefties at all. My dad used to... Oh, well, I grew up thinking The Guardian was called that that, what does he used to call it? That communist rag, I think he used to call it. And I, the first time I bought a copy of The Guardian, which was, I was here as a grown-up, I felt so incredibly naughty, because we'd always read The Telegraph.
And you just had to hide it inside the Telegraph.
We'd always read The Telegraph at home. Always, I always grew up, you know, reading the newspaper. I've got a friend who still says, I just used to think you were so weird. You used to sit and read the paper.
I think that is something. Growing up in a house where people are politically engaged at any sort of level, really, some sort of ideology is going to bubble up out of that, isn't it? Even if it's in reaction to.
But I think I was always... There was always some... I just used to be at school just... a little bit different, I think, than...
Yeah.
I remember I had a... when it was when AIDS and HIV, and, you know, the there was a poster that was 2 feet in the bed, you know,
two feet
2 feet that way, and it said something on it about, I don't know, wearing condoms, not getting AIDS, or just don't get AIDS if you can. Try to. You know, one of those sort of nice 80s campaigns. And I had it taped to the my folder, my English folder, and had it propped up in the window of the classroom, and the head teacher came. Get this filth out of here.
Really?
Yeah, so you think, oh, that's interesting.
I mean, we're children of our time as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
As well, because I grew up
in the 80s, maybe.
I know, I'm so jealous.
Are you?
Yeah.
Is that a cool and groovy thing?
Well, you just had good hair.
let's not show the photos.
Don't get any photos.
No, like my hair's not right.
My glasses
are
probably
right this decade,
as big or even slightly bigger than they were now.
Yes.
Pink.
Yeah.
Quite circly.
Lovely.
Big hair. Yeah. Big hair.
See, I've got big glasses.
It was
big
mousse.
Hair. I was born for
it was when mousse.
Lot of scrunching.
Lots of scrunching.
When diffusers were first in, but before all the straightening bollocks happened.
Yeah. Crimpers we had as well, didn't
we? Yes.
I had
a perm. This curly-headed woman had a perm. What the hell is that about?
I did have a perm once, but I just...
Did you? You were curly.
I don't ever want to talk about it. It's the most awful thing I've ever done. It was just terrible.
Isn't it? You're just like, I just like messing about.
Yeah. I had a pair of straighteners that you closed and then you flipped the button and then you opened them and they were crimpers. It kind of like did this so you could... You could straighten and crimp.
You should remake those.
I think I should.
That's
where
your future
is going to be.
You can't
buy
crimpers anymore, can you?
I saw a girl with some amazing
in
crimp
a sort of
hair
girl's world, you know, your
probably
Barbie.
Is.
There's probably Barbie hair crimpers.
I'm going to source some this afternoon. That's what we're going to do.
It'll come again. You know, our grandchildren will all be what, look, God, you straightened your hair.
Yeah, yeah.
I
can't actually get out the door. My hair is so big.
But yeah, the 80s were...
I remember two things about the political world that I grew up in. One is that my dad was a shop steward. Now, he was the shop steward of the Television Workers Union. So, you know, they weren't exactly down shoveling coal down pits, but they did go on strike once. And that, it terrified me. I was about maybe 10 or something. I was terrified because I thought we weren't going to be able to eat. My dad went moonlighting because they were clearly not getting paid. I mean, I don't know what. And he went and was a security guard at the old mental hospital at Netley before it got taken down.
Oh, my God.
And later I said, wasn't that scary? And he said, you fucking bet it was. It was absolutely terrifying. And you'd have to patrol the corridors. And I think now that time has gone by and the building's gone and my dear father's gone, I can tell you that before he finished, he took a screwdriver, removed all the beautiful brass finger plates and door handles from the doors. And they are all now
here today
in a house in Southampton. Beautifully polished up, I can remember, because they were all going to go to scrap.
Oh,
and he thought,
I'll have those.
I'll have them. Oh. So there's a little bit of history there. But yeah, so he was a shop steward. And then I can remember later thinking, oh, that's quite interesting, isn't it? That you were a sort of union-y sort of rights person. And then I wasn't brought up by my mother. So time with my mother was sort of short. But I can remember at the time seeing my mother and my mother ranting about the police's violence against the minors and being angry.
Yeah.
And talking about how, you know, when you're little and you go to the police and the police look after you and they're there for you and this is, you know, the people turning against the people. I'm just sitting there. I mean, I must be about 15, 16 at this point thinking, bloody hell, where's all this guy? I had no idea you had all this in you. So, and I sort of think, oh, look, there's quite a lot of soup there.
Yes.
Politics
yeah,
soup.
Yes, yes. Compost.
That I was swimming
compost.
In. That I didn't
politics,
I didn't realise necessarily I was swimming
child.
In.
Child.
How much of your young person politics was, some of it for me was sometimes I went along with things without really understanding them.
Oh,
because
or
it was
I
what the cool kids did.
Yeah.
It was because there was somebody was running a gig in aid of something, but there was good band on, so you went. And you I didn't really understand.
Yeah, I think, because when I was 8, I had Mo when I was just before I was 19. I was
That's
18
your son,
when
Mo.
I had my son, yeah. And moved out of home. And that was when the.
Were you on your own when you had him?
No, I was with his dad.
You were with his
yeah,
dad,
yeah. And we moved out, lived in Hartington Road and Mount Pleasant Road. And but that was the beginning of the whole poll tax thing.
Yes.
So when we were living in Hartington Road, the first poll tax forms came round and we were like, not signing
I'm
this.
Sorry,
signed.
What?
If I'm doing that. And we started, you know, we went to all the meetings and, you know, the got in sort of with the militant, those people, you know, militant meetings. Chris Chope was our MP then. Do you remember Chris Chope?
I do remember. I didn't vote for Chris Chope. It was a famous postcard that got produced lately. He lived opposite my dad.
Awful.
I always thought I could go and put some...
And I remember at the time, we went to a meeting at Mount Pleasant School and I was working and Mel's dad was working and... I don't think we had Merle. We hadn't had Merle then, I don't think. Maybe I was pregnant at the time. But we were both working, both paying, you know, taxpayers. And I don't know, I raised some question about it. And Chris Chope's answer was that, well, I was, you know, because I was most obviously on benefits, I wouldn't have to pay whatever it was. You know, I would get, you know, I'd be means tested and, you know, obviously,
yeah.
you know, people like you on benefits. And just being absolutely outraged
yeah.
at the arrogance of the man. And then he had that bloody Rottweiler, do you remember?
No.
It was when the dangerous, I don't know, he was in the paper with some, with his horrible dog.
What,
and,
trying to defend his
vile
yeah, dog?
Oh, yeah, his horrible dog. And, oh, just the most, just, I don't know, is he still around?
He's
God.
Still an MP.
Is he?
Hello, Chris!
Not down here anymore,
no,
I don't think.
No, God. Just, and he just looked like
He's not
Tory.
Him, he's not a local person.
Just looked like a Tory, didn't he, as well? He's like
proper
fat face,
Tory.
Jowl neck and the whole thing. I think I feel him in my mind. So anyway, got involved with all the poll tax stuff. So really, and didn't really, I think looking back, probably didn't see the poll tax stuff as being massively political. It was
yes.
just, you know... Can't pay.
A very
pay.
Sort of practical,
yeah, not gonna pay.
Fairness
this is
issue.
Absolutely the most
outrageous.
Unfair thing that you've ever done. Like, how can you think this? I mean, you know, I suppose luckily in a way it was it put an end to Thatcher, really, didn't it? Because it made her. I mean, that was one of the big things.
One of the big things that weakened
her.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
You know, even within her own party, and then went on the poll tax, the big poll tax march that ended in the, you know, the sort of famous. Big riot.
The big riot.
Had
yeah.
Had a baby and a dog at the riot. It was like, I think we better go now.
I remember people being in the pub
yeah.
and people coming in,
yeah.
sort of pumped up on adrenaline, going, oh my God, you won't believe
well, we
what happened and what we've
that.
Just come
yeah,
from.
We got back from that completely freaked out. Mm. Completely freaked out, you know, so I was 18, well, I was probably 19 by then. Merle's dad was—he was a couple of years older than me, so yeah, 21, little baby,
yeah,
on a string, you know, because we were.
You've gone to march with a sign,
yeah,
and
like,
sing some songs.
Don't pay, can't pay, and all this, and then got back completely shell shocked, like what the hell? And we thought, let's just go for a nice day out to Twyford.
Oh,
nice day out on
nice.
The train. Let's go for a nice
the
day out.
The significance of Twyford is just
No, it wasn't quite
was
there.
Before then.
Got to got to that station. It's Shawford, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shawford Station. Got off Shawford Station. Armed police everywhere. Like, just, and there was a siege. It was, I don't know if you, do you remember the Morrows?
No.
No. Big
what,
victorious.
So someone with a gun in
yeah,
the house?
Yeah, guy had a, his friend or girlfriend banged up in a house with a
that was
sick.
That was,
no, police, you know, Shawford down. Police everywhere. We were like, we can't cope with this. So a lovely peaceful day in Shawford was equally stressful as being involved in a sort of a riot. We were just sort of down from Whitehall when and you could see it just all happening
yeah.
up there and I was like, we've just got to get out of
yeah.
here. I don't really want to go and get involved in that. That looks really and not so unexpected.
Like we'll
as
get
well.
Hurt.
I mean, I think nowadays it's almost like nowadays you go on those marches and you know that then at some point there's gonna be a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
But we nobody there.
But also
well,
now there are
completely
people in high vis jackets with steward
yeah.
written on them and
mm-hmm.
you know, there people no chains and police along the line, but it was
just a big jamboree.
Yeah.
It was a jamboree.
It started in
where did we start? Kenilworth. It was a long walk. Really,
but there was a lot of hoo-ha going on there. I mean, obviously there had been the grown-ups before us had been doing. There were the power cuts when I was a child, and there'd been the 3-day week and the rubbish piling up on the streets and the bodies not being buried and all. I'm born in 1963, so I'm in my sort of 10, 12 years old or something when that happened. Awful. Again, scary, dark. I mean, fearful. You know, you're watching telly and suddenly the lights go off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there had been that. And then there'd been a lot of aggro around... do you remember people trying to go to Stonehenge for the solstice and all that?
Yeah, well, that was Moel's dad the year before.
And Notting Hill Carnival, Battle of the
Beanfield,
Notting Hill, the riots, the Brixton riots. We'd lived through a period of the pub bombings with the IRA and their sort of mainland.
I was talking to you about that campaign. The other day, that living constantly, and I only thought about it the other day was that it was more than usual that there would be a bomb going off somewhere.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten. On the I'd news almost forgotten or that. The,
yeah.
And the other thing I was talking to you about was that my constant terror of nuclear war.
Absolutely.
Because I was kind of laughing about it. And then Mum was like, I genuinely was scared. Like,
we were going to die.
This is real. We were poised to...
Yeah.
Oh, scary. And we were going to die. Not. We weren't just going to be killed fast. We were going to die in horrible...
Yeah. And then we were going to have make a thing, a mattress.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Put it at a 45-degree angle, and then, you'll be fine.
Whitewash your windows for the... do you remember Where the Wind Blows, Raymond Briggs?
Oh, don't. That's heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is absolutely heartbreaking. But it's
Threads. Do you remember Threads?
Oh, my God.
Like a horror film.
Yes.
Zombies
walking around desperately trying to find petrol and discover who was contaminated and who wasn't contaminated. And
but that's a, this person here, that's history.
It all just seems
that
very odd.
History.
We have lectures on it. I had a lecture about getting against when they thought... Like Cuban Missile Crisis, had lectures about that.
Greenham was very fundamental for me as well.
Yeah, completely.
You're a little bit younger than me,
though,
aren't you?
Really, that's one of the
how
great
old are you?
Regrets.
I'm just 50.
How old are you? 43.
43, yeah. So you would have been, you were too little. I was only a teenager.
When I came back, so a lot of people I knew, we used to go down to, we used to eat at the teapot and go to the veggie co-op. And so it was all still sort of going on. But I just missed it. So a lot of people I know did all the Nuke Watch and were up at Greenham. And it's one of those things where I just think, if I'd got in with those people a couple of years earlier, I could have been there.
And gone and seen it.
I do really regret that, actually.
That was another... Sorry,
I would just be a lesbian now if I'd have gone.
Oh, yeah. Just a practical lesbian.
Just out of necessity.
Damn! The lesbians are all going, right. Yeah, all right.
No, you wouldn't.
It's not a lifestyle choice. That was another thing. Sorry, my own history popping into my head. I remember overhearing my dad say in conversation, talking about the Greenham women and about how much he admired them.
Oh, really?
And just like,
yeah, that wouldn't have been a conversation in my house at all.
You do you?
That's
and he
really
said it,
cool.
That it was a very brave...
Yeah.
A noble, he said. Yeah. It was a very brave and noble thing that they did.
No, that wouldn't have been. That wouldn't have been. That wouldn't have been said. I don't think in my house they would have been derided somewhat. I think, but
it's not. I
remember reading about them in the paper and thinking, as a teenager in Portugal, not really understanding what they were doing, but thinking, sounds like kind of fun. I think I always had that feeling that that sounds like a cool thing to do. Whether I understood why they were doing it or not,
I've just had another a friend I know who lived at the Greenham camps. I wonder if she'd come and talk about it on the podcast.
Oh,
that would be amazing.
Gosh. Yeah, amazing.
There was an awful lot towards the latter
There's
part
of
it. There was a lot of strife in the camp,
yeah.
And that was a very difficult time for a lot of them. Mm. I know. And then obviously, because we referred earlier to Twyford, a lot of that the idea of being based somewhere as a protest that got taken on to Twyford Down when people were trying to stop the road going through.
Absolutely, Swampy.
Swampy, the famous Swampy. I wonder where Swampy is now. That was surprising. I was working then and had to take some... I was taking some guests from Japan to the Watercress Railway, which is a beautiful preserved steam railway out there. And as we were going, I was just sort of saying, this is what you can see, this is what you can see. And I just said... And this, as we go through this road, which still is a terrible scar through,
it is amazing, isn't
through
it?
The countryside, and saying, oh, this was the site of a famous protest. And they'd heard about it.
Wow.
They were aware of this protest.
Amazing.
From Japan.
I think it probably was quite groundbreaking, really, because there hadn't... Well, Greenpeace, obviously, had been doing... You know, the Rainbow Warrior had been sailing and doing its anti-whaling and all that for
I don't know if... I can't remember. I was listening to something this morning where you sort of think that because your thing is... of your time was radical and new and different. But of course you can go to the Jarrow marches who've made these land clearances, they've committed to they've committed their lives to a sort of protest.
Yes.
A period of protest. But Twyford was, well, it was on the national news every night.
Yes, they were, what did they call
them? There seemed to be people living in trees.
Eco-warriors.
Eco-warriors.
We didn't have eco-warriors before that, did we?
No.
I don't remember.
We could do with a few more bloody eco-warriors now.
Where are they?
Caroline Lucas seems to be a woman standing alone.
Yeah, I saw they blocked a fracking site with a huge wind turbine blade yesterday.
Yeah?
Yesterday, maybe? Mm-hmm. Or maybe they've done it already. I just saw a picture of it. It looked. I was like, how did you get that there? Where did you get that from?
They probably got some left over on the Isle of Wight after they shut them down.
Sailed
there's probably over. Some kicking about.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of, soup of where we came from. So now, Maisie, it's all up to you.
It's all up to you to carry on
the torch.
Well, and you can, you've got, my daughter, who is at the moment, finds it all a bit annoying.
Yes.
Because obviously it's something that I talk about far too much.
Yeah.
But I'm quietly confident that
she
will bubble through.
Well, it will just be, like we said, just one of those things that actually there's...
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why...
Yeah, what other way of...
What other way of thinking is there?
God, maybe she'll turn into a massive right winger.
Yeah, yeah.
It does happen, doesn't it?
I've always worried
about that. People turn against their upbringing.
Can you imagine?
She comes home. Well, that was funny when you went off the first time to study politics at
I've only ever been with woodcraft people and, Mum and her cohorts.
Yeah.
And they're all left wing, aren't they? And then pretty much.
Most of them
all not blatantly, I think so. I don't do very well at
having a broad.
But then I noticed it most when I got to university and I was sat in a seminar and a boy said, it was just after, it was we were straight back after Margaret Thatcher died, and he made some comment about her being a great female idol and I was like, you clearly know nothing, and he was like, oh, she saved our economy, and I was like, I didn't know people actually thought like this,
shocking,
I'd never met people, and he was saying things about,
and if that's not an advert for going to university, I don't know what it is.
He was saying things about it's okay to exploit third world countries because it helps them rise economically, and we used to sit in this seminar and be like, are you an idiot, I had no constructive things to say to him because I was like, you're wrong. And I didn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good at dealing with him because I was like, you're just wrong.
I was thinking about it, because there's a whole other world that exists out there. Because I was looking through my Facebook news feed the other day.
Like
and it's all predominantly, nice left-wing people saying nice things
you agree
stuff.
With.
Yeah. And then I suddenly thought, there's people somewhere whose Facebook news feed is not like this.
Yeah.
And they're getting all the other stuff. They're like going, all the horrible, there must be horrible versions of all those.
Now that we can choose our own news and choose our own people, this idea that we live in these, make these silos.
I was reading an article the other day about a man who, he was looking at his Twitter and who he followed on Twitter and realised he only followed people he agreed with.
Yeah.
So he unfollowed everyone he agreed with and followed people he disagreed with. And so it was all BNP members, EDL members,
horrible.
I say it's good for you, but it's quite exhausting.
Yeah, he was saying it was good to see how there are all these crazy people who all agree with these things, but he didn't like it.
And maybe just for a month. You do it for a month and then write an article about it.
Or just
then...
have two Twitter.
Two Twitter.
This is
happy
my,
and sad.
This is my crazy neo-Nazi.
And this is what I'm just sitting on the sofa with a can of beer.
I just want
to
relax.
It was quite interesting to read because I was looking through mine and I only follow comedians I think are funny. I only follow newspapers I agree with.
Yes,
I only follow...
not comedians you don't think are funny.
Well, I don't bother following, someone who tells stupid.
Well, maybe this should be our New Year's resolution, my sisters. We need to go and spend spend some time with people we don't like.
Shoe on the other foot or whatever it is. Yeah.
I feel like I've done that in all.
Well, I've enjoyed this time I've spent with you.
Oh, I've enjoyed the time spending with you.
And you've been my first, multi-person interview.
Multi-purpose.
And thank you so much for sharing so much of your
story.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was fun.
Nobody rang the doorbell.
Bye!
Well, that was my interview with Catherine and Maisie. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. It was lovely to speak to them both and to see a little bit of the relationship that they're enjoying as they grow up from being, you know, mother and child to mother and grown-up child. I hope that I have that sort of relationship with my daughter as she gets older. She just finds me annoying at the moment, so that's the bit we're in. So that's the end of the podcast for this week. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please do subscribe. You can subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that you see the podcast. If you squiggle around, you'll usually find a subscription button there. It just means that it'll get downloaded to you automatically every week and you don't have to worry about finding it. You can find us on the web at nobitspod.com. Follow the show on Twitter at nobitspod. And on Facebook, Smooth Style No Bits. I will always put up things I refer to on the show. So this week I'm going to put up the original performance by the Roaches of Hallelujah that we attempted to recreate at the Jam Cabaret and you heard me talk about. Have a very, very happy New Year's Eve and I'll chat to you next week. Bye-bye.